This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Are you ready for some football? Buffalo Bills style.
Looking for Foster. Makes the catch at the Jacksonville 40. Scooting down the right sideline. He's going. He is in.
Caught by the tight end, Troy Lobo. Knocked down right away by Jordan Poyer. What a tackle. Ball is out again. And the Bills recover again. Milano on top of it. He may keep it himself. Allen at the 5. Into the end zone. He goes. Touchdown. Touchdown. Josh Allen does it yet again.
Bring it. This is the post-game show. Buffalo Bills football on the Buffalo Bills radio network is brought to you by...
by Northwest Bank, increasing the value of you.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Buffalo Bills post-game show. I'm Nate Geary. Joe DiBiase along with me. I've got Derek Kramer giving you some updates throughout the evening. We go until about 11:30 here, taking your phone calls, 803-0551, 888-552-550. After a Bills win, 2-0 on the preseason, after a 27-14 win on the road against the Carolina Panthers. After a good week of joint practices, the Bills offense comes out looking sharp once more, starting offense putting 10 points, two scoring drives on the first two drives of the game. The only two drives for the starting offense, Josh Allen ends up finishing the ball game with really what I think is maybe his best performance to date as the Buffalo Bills quarterback, finishing 9 of 11 for 102 yards, no TDs, no interceptions, and 105.3 quarterback rating. Not to be outdone by Matt Barkley, though. He ended up finishing the afternoon 8-10, 110 yards, and a touchdown to Duke Williams in the third quarter. Both quarterbacks looked really good. Tyree Jackson did not look all that good in this one. Really kind of a second performance in a row where Tyree Jackson definitely just didn't have it all in this one. He finishes the game 4 of 10 for 68 yards and an interception. We'll be hearing from Sean McDermott soon. He'll be coming along live for the Coach's Podium, which is brought to you by Northtown Automotive, celebrating 50 years of serving Western New York. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Let's go to the Latempio Complete Stats of the Game. Latempio PC Law Group, complete attention, complete answers, complete counsel. And the stats that stick out to me are the quarterback stats. Obviously, Tyree Jackson's 4 of 10, 68 yards hurts the combined quarterback stats. But as a unit, 21 of 31, 279 yards, a TD and an interception, a 93.5 quarterback rating in that game. So the combined quarterback stats stood out to me in this game. But I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Cole Beasley and two drives, 10 fantasy points in PPR leagues. Obviously not playing any real fantasy games as of yet, but that's a really great sign for anybody who has drafted or has Cole Beasley on their PPR format leagues, whether it be Dynasty or normal play. Cole Beasley looks to me like the weapon this football team has been searching for quite some time. He's got something about his game that goes really, really well with this offense. Tommy Sweeney, another player that's really stood out to me all preseason long, getting the opportunity, the seventh round pick. Listen, the two seventh round picks of this football team this year, Tommy Sweeney and Daryl Johnson, have both had very good camps. That's the one thing you can continue to say about this Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott front office, and I think this is a testament to the scouting staff as well, of just how much talent this team has been able to find in the later rounds of the draft. Most recently, Taron Johnson, a former fifth-round pick, he comes to mind. Saran Neal, another guy who is a fifth- or sixth-round pick. And then, obviously, this year, you've got two guys in the seventh round who are both playing meaningful snaps in the preseason. Both guys have stood out to me in training camp after getting opportunity like Tommy Sweeney did with the first two guys in a Dawson Knox that they drafted much higher than him in the third round, and or in the fourth round, I should say. And then, obviously, the injury to Jeremy Kroom, a guy who really came on at the end of last season as this team's potential number one tight end going into this year. Obviously, Tyler Croft gets signed to be this team's number one tight end, and due to injury, he is unable to play and looks like he'll begin the season on the PUP list, the physically unable to perform list, which leaves him out until week 7 of the regular season. So Tommy Sweeney might be getting an extended look or an extended opportunity here to continue building chemistry with Josh Allen. There does appear to be a chemistry there. He's not a burner, but he is. He's got that big body. He just seems to find the openings in the defense and does a nice job of really catching everything that comes his way. 803-0550-1888-552-550. If you've got thoughts on this evening's game, if a player in particular stood out to you, another great game, well, I should say another highlight reel play from Christian Wade today, and the guy just keeps making plays with the ball in his hand. It's pretty remarkable what he's able to do with the ball when it's in his hands. But I think maybe more importantly, and Joe, we kind of like looked at each other when this happened, and I want to say that you kind of ruined it. We didn't really watch it live because the stream comes in a little bit quicker on the radio.
Well, I saw that you were on your phone and that Derek wasn't looking too. So I just wanted to make sure.
So you wanted to help us.
I didn't really say, oh, guys, like Christian Wade's about to break a big one. I just said, guys, just make sure you're watching. That's all I said.
I believe you said something about Christian Wade, though.
I did not. I said, guys, make sure you're watching. I definitely did not mention Christian Wade.
Anyways, I thought if he would have scored, that was his first touch of the game. You couldn't
second touch of his life.
Second touch of his life would have been his second career touchdown. Two different ways. There, if he had scored on that play, there's no way you could give him the ball again in that game and ruin his streak of 2 for 2.
But like, you're gonna keep doing that, like every game.
Every
he's gonna
game
get one
give,
touch for a touchdown. And you got to take him off.
And
the field?
You got to take him off the field immediately because you can't possibly ruin that streak.
He retires in like 2 years with like 10 touchdowns on 10 carries.
10 touchdowns, that'd be amazing. And the, just preseason touchdowns, nonetheless, you know. 803-0550-1888-552-550. Isaiah McKenzie, another player today. Couple of plays. And that's really what he's been doing every week, is one or two plays where Isaiah McKenzie sticks out to me as a player who has probably worked himself in, I think, firmly. If last week's performance didn't put Isaiah McKenzie in the running to be this, I don't want to say the starting, but the guy that makes the sixth wide receiver spot on this roster, he's getting awfully close to that. I think Duke Williams had a nice game today, finally. I know Sean McDermott mentioned this week wanting to see something from his rookie receiver as he has unfortunately not really stood out much in training camp. And I'm getting a bunch of tweets about the radio.com app not working. So if we're having any issues, we'll try to get that taken care of here as soon as possible. We're sorry for that technical difficulty. So we should have that up here in a few minutes. Let's go to the phones where we've got Matt in Prattsburg. Matt, you're on the postgame show. Welcome, Matt.
Hey there. Although we have great receivers, I think, what is going on with Robert Foster? Why can they not include him in our offense? What's going on?
He started tonight.
I understand he started. Why are they not targeting him?
I don't know. I don't have a question. I don't have the answer for you on that one, Matt. I would tell you that he started the game tonight. And the one thing I'll say about Robert Foster is I think right now there is this, especially in the preseason, they're starting early throwing the football. I think out of the first 10 plays, Josh Allen threw the ball 8 times, which should tell you a little bit about what they're doing in the preseason. And during the halftime show, I spoke a little to Sale during the halftime show, and Sale mentioned that he thinks it's more of them trying to get as many reps through the passing game as possible in the preseason. I tend to start to see a trend here. A team that's coming out and is making throwing the football a big part of their offensive scheme, and I'm all about that. But I think with Robert Foster, I don't really think we've seen Josh Allen take that shot yet. I think there's been this focus of Josh Allen to try to get on the same page with Cole Beasley. And no offense to Robert Foster, right now he's fourth or fifth on the depth chart. So what I'll say about Robert Foster is he's likely going to be on the same path that he was last year. A slow start. At some point in the midseason, he's got the chemistry that he already needs built with Josh Allen, which is what, that's a good thing, is you don't have to worry about those two working on any chemistry issues. Those guys have that locked down. I think once this offense opens up and starts taking those shots downfield, what I like is that Josh Allen, early in this preseason, is taking what the defense is getting him, giving him. He's not stretching the ball down the field just because. He's not playing hero ball. He's not running outside the pocket and launching it downfield to wide receivers. What he's doing is playing within the scheme of the offense, and more importantly, finding Cole Beasley on every opportunity. He's the one guy on every play that consistently gets open at the line of scrimmage. That's why he was brought in. But let's go to the podium now because Sean McDermott is with us here live.
Okay, I'll go ahead and get started. I just want to open it up by thanking Wofford for their hospitality and the Panthers this week. It's been a great week for us. Got in a lot of good work down there. And then here tonight, finishing it off. Andy Kai in particular down there that does a great job for Wofford and helped us out a lot this week. So with that, I'll open up to your questions.
Yeah, it was a pretty gratifying, you know, week for you. I mean, the practices we said were very beneficial, and then I think you know your first strings played pretty well tonight. Pretty good week overall, would you say?
Yeah, I thought it was. There's still a lot of work to do, but I thought we grew as a team, both on the field and off the field, and that was the goal. And again, a lot of work remains. Way too many penalties tonight in the second half, in particular, but things we can learn from. So it's a time for us to continue to grow and learn.
Sean, you mentioned last week about how Josh was really maybe too hyped up for when he first got out there, and it kind of showed in how he played. This looked like a more, at least from above, a composed guy in the decisions he made, crisp throws. What were your observations of what you saw in those two series from him?
Yeah, I would echo that. He did look like the game slowed down this week a little bit for him, and that's good to see. Again, I've said this before, whether it's a quarterback in this case or another position, a young player that continues to grow and the game slows down for him is a good thing.
Finding Cole Beasley looked like, again, exploiting a lot of what was available underneath. That showed something there that his thoughts were to really read and let it come to him as opposed to maybe forcing things downfield.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to take what the defense gives us in terms of whether it's matchups or scheme. And so that continues to show Josh's development. It comes from his hard work. You know, he's been working hard. Matt also, I thought, had a good night. So when you practice a certain way, you know, those habits transfer at times over to the game.
Sean, Tommy Sweeney, can you just give us your impression of this kid? You know, he's gotten the opportunity, and he really seems to have grabbed it by the throat with all the chances. Just kind of talk about his performance and what you've seen of him.
He's done a good job. He really has. I thought the one thing we noticed early on was that he's good in a lot of areas, you know, and he's smart, tough. And tonight, he caught the ball well, and it was good to see, again, another young player do some good things for us, and we moved the ball, I thought, well offensively early on in particular.
What's up with Ty? He didn't practice at the end of Wednesday, or most of Wednesday, and then sat out tonight. What's going on with him?
Yeah, just some knee soreness.
Is it serious, or are we?
We don't think so. I mean, he's feeling a little bit better today, and we'll just take it one day at a time.
Does it continue to be gratifying? He was pretty solid last week, Matt Barkley, and you mentioned it tonight too. To know that you, again, it looks like you have that number two spot in good hands.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to have Matt. I really appreciate not only the way he played, but his leadership on this football team and the way he works, his work with Josh and Ty. That's, as I mentioned last week, that's an important piece, right, is that backup quarterback position. And he's done a real nice job to this point.
Pass rush and pass breakups, Coach, in the first half by both of your first two defensive units, just how active the group was.
I thought line of scrimmage-wise we did a good job. We were active up front on the defensive front, and then the offensive line did a good job of establishing the line of scrimmage early in the game, whether it's run or pass game in this case. And that's important to our success. Got our hands up on defense, got our hands on a couple balls. Good to see. A lot of work, though, to do.
Back end of your depth chart at receiver, a lot of guys jockeying for a spot. Just Duke tonight, and then maybe Ray and Isaiah, too.
Yeah, that was part of the plan, was to take a look at some of those guys. and see what they could do. And I thought we achieved some of our goal of watching them play with Matt, some of them with Josh. So I was happy to see Duke play strong and Isaiah, and so there's some good competition there.
Is that the kind of play you're expecting from a 6'3 wide receiver in the end zone? Like, go up, twist, out jump it, you know what I mean? Like, when you see that guy on your roster, 6'3, 2 something, that's the kind of play you're expecting to make, right?
Yeah, that's right. And another young player, that made a big time contribution tonight. You could feel him. I mean, he flashed, and I think he did some good things in the run game, blocking as well. I mean, it's not just what you do catching the football, but it's being a team player and how willing are you to block when you get a block.
Speaking of that, Ray not only has a couple of returns, makes a tackle as a gunner on special team. I mean, I think that's a new job for him this year.
Yeah, I mean, that was big. I mean, covering that punt, I know, you never know what happens. They get, get a good return there, and the game's, is what it is, and we covered a good punt. Ray did a nice job, and then the heads-up, really a heads-up play at the end. I mean, not fielding that punt, he was just on top of it situationally. If we field that punt, fair catch it, then, we can't run the clock out necessarily there. Just smart situational football for a young player.
So you alluded to it briefly with Chris's question, but moving Duke and Ray, well, not Ray, but Isaiah, up to get in with Matt. I mean, Tyree is obviously, he's having a tough time, and that's understandable. But you needed to see those receivers with a guy who could get him the ball. Is that, would that be a correct assessment on that, why you were able to do that?
Yeah, I mean, that and a little bit of, hey, we had some guys not play tonight offensively with JV there, so we were able to move some of those guys up. And then, it was kind of a chain reaction. We moved some of the other guys up to play with Matt. So it was both, really. Yeah.
Christian. He doesn't touch the ball much, but something good seems to happen every time he does.
That would have been was that his second touch of his career?
Yeah, first catch.
Oh, man.
48 yards.
Down to the 1 yard line?
Yeah.
Awesome. I could feel the sideline like a tidal wave about to just come over me, so that was another special moment for Christian and our team.
Sean, it was only 3 days of football, so without getting carried away, but have you learned anything about your team since you made the trip to Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a good group of guys, and that's not new to me. It's we've got a group of guys that love to play ball, they love to be around each other, and they're committed to working hard. Again, it's not that I didn't know that before, but it was reaffirmed for me on this trip. And we did some neat things. We stopped for ice cream on the way up on the buses yesterday off the highway, and those guys loved it. They just appreciated it, and it was good to see them again hang out together. And that's how you, part of the way you build a team is that cohesiveness and that chemistry.
What flavor did you get?
It was a great. It was at Lemons. I think it was 485 on the way up here. I had peach. Yeah, it was awesome. And a couple of guys said it's the best milkshake they've ever had.
Sean McDermott's Coach's Podium there, brought to you by Northtown Automotive, celebrating 50 years of serving Western New York. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. After a quick timeout, we'll get you the electric play of the game. It's brought to you by Belknap Heating and Cooling. Go green, save energy and money with electric heat pump solutions from Belknap. We'll also get you the MVP of the game. That one's brought to you by Steve Foley Law. The MVP of your case, settle for more with Steve Foley Law. When we come back, we'll get those to you next. We'll continue breaking down the Bills' 27-14 victory over the Carolina Panthers here on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network.
Second and 6, Panthers at the Buffalo 36-yard line. The snap to Greer. Quick pass left side. Intercepted. Picked off. It is picked off by Johnson. Kevin Johnson's got clear sailing to the end zone. There he goes. 20, 10, 5. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo. Kevin Johnson, free agent pickup for the Buffalo Bills, takes it back all the way on a poorly thrown ball by Will Greer.
That Kevin Johnson interception, your electric play of the game. It's brought to you by Belknap Heating and Cooling. Go green, save energy and money with electric heat pump solutions from Belknap. Nate Geary here, Joe DiBiase, bringing you the Network Postgame Show. After a 27-14 Bills victory in preseason game number 2, first road game of the year. Joe, is it too early for Super Bowl talk?
No, it is not. Last week would have been too early, but now I think we have definitely...
We are, and they're actually right now currently showing Christian Wade rugby highlights.
Right. Well, he's the best player in football of all time, and so that definitely has to mean Super Bowl, I think.
He literally just looks like the same player. It doesn't even look like he's wearing pads, to be quite honest.
No, he looks fast. Like, it looks like he's not hindered by them. He almost looked like on the catch, too, as he's turning. It almost looked like a one-handed catch. Like, he almost got it, like, in his arm.
He broke five tackles on that play.
Yeah.
Five.
Five.
In fact, one tackle was from three people.
So, one player?
The second broken tackle, the second time he broke through tackles, he, like, stopped, and three players just completely blew past him.
It's amazing.
It's pretty fun. It's a fun story.
He was at one point averaging over 60 yards per touch. In the NFL.
Unfortunately, I do believe that's come down with 2 carries for 4 yards tonight.
He has to settle for 30-something.
Yeah, three. Well, yeah. Yeah. Good for him. Whatever ends up happening, he'll likely end up on the practice squad. The Bills get an 11th roster spot exemption for him on the practice squad. So you could probably see Christian Wade on the practice squad all season long. He would not be eligible to be brought up to the active roster at any point if he ended up being on the practice squad as one of the 11th or as the roster exemption. I wonder, though, if they felt good enough about him. Could they just keep him as a normal practice squad player and not an exemption?
I would say maybe if you didn't have so many running backs already.
I guess why would you want to do that?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he has shown like the speed he has. If I were another team that didn't have the depth we do, I'd be intrigued to be like, all right, give him a shot on it. Let's see. Who cares? But since you've got so many guys already and there's already so many guys trying to make the team, and he also is not a running back like four you already have that don't give you special teams at this point in time, I would think not. But, hey, maybe in 2020 your running back core starts with Devin Singletary, Christian Wade, and someone else.
Perhaps.
That you draft or something like that. It's setting up. Like, he's fast. I like him. There is some potential there. That's all I'm saying. His speed, and you saw like his contact balance tonight where he runs through two defenders trying to bring him down from opposite sides, and it didn't even look that hard for him. Like, there's at least some potential in there, obviously, with the speed and the physicality he has. So I'm excited.
Oh, God.
Preseason game number 4 should just be him getting 30 carries, by the way.
You think?
Yeah. Why not?
Just him and Tyree Jackson and like a triple option?
Remember
they had to do that a couple of years ago? They literally just kind of like lined up in...
In what, the fourth preseason game?
Or? Yeah, they had like, I think it was, the Matt Sims year where they just had to line up and kind of just...
Was Matt Sims running that type of offense?
No, maybe it was...
Was it Thad Lewis?
No, I'm thinking about the Brad Smith year. Where Brad Smith played quarterback in the fourth preseason game because they literally had...
It was a college off. It was Georgia Tech.
Yes.
Looks like Georgia Tech.
Yes, they were running option. 803-0551, 888-552-550. Who stood out to you in today's 27-14 win? I think that I kind of keep going back to the starting offense. It's not that the defense didn't play well today. I just don't know what you really saw against a Kyle Allen and no Christian McCaffrey. They had the starting receivers out there. DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel both played. No Greg Olsen. It was hard to take away anything from what the defense did against that offense. However, the defense also for the Carolina Panthers did not dress a Luke Kuechly. I did not see Brian Burns play. Did you? Or maybe
he didn't play.
I just didn't notice him, which is skeptical because he's very noticeable. He wasn't, anyways, in the first preseason game last week. He had 2 sacks in that one and has been a menace during training camp. So they didn't. They were missing out some of their better players. I didn't see Bruce Irvin out there either. So having said that, I mean, take away what you will. I think I saw a tweet from Ron Rivera, not from Ron Rivera, but a quote from Ron Rivera after the game saying, you know, they really attacked the Mike linebacker, the starting offense did without Luke Kuechly in there. And I guess my argument was, yeah, that's right. But, I mean, if you were going to put Luke Kuechly in that exact same position, you're probably going to have the same result. You don't want to be putting a middle linebacker on Cole Beasley. It's pretty apparent that Cole Beasley, if he isn't the focal point of the offense –
He's at least going to be a big part of it.
He's darn close.
At the very least. He's kind of the easy one, so I kind of don't want to just give it to the easy answer because I think we kind of knew that we've known all along that Beasley was going to at least have some sort of role in this offense. That's why they paid him. But the thing I've been wondering about this team really going back to when they signed Tyler Croft and drafted Dawson Knox is what are they going to have anything at tight end this season, and then all the injuries happen, and when you get down to a 7th-round rookie as potentially your starting tight end, that's generally not a place you want to be. And to me, it was setting up for a team that might not be able to utilize the tight end just because there are so many injuries and you don't have any bodies there. What Sweeney showed tonight and what he has kind of been doing throughout camp is giving me a little bit of optimism that that position might not be a dud to start the year, even if they have injuries like with Knox and with with Kroft. Like, he doesn't have to set the world on fire, but if he can give you something like he did tonight, where he can break free on a couple of open routes and he can make some nice catches, like, he showed some pretty decent athleticism. I'm not saying he's going to be a superstar, but if he can be any type of factor like he was tonight in the regular season, then I think that's going to just be another element to their offense that they might not otherwise have.
Yeah, you know, I think maybe what it kind of signifies more than anything, man, Charles Clay was pretty piss poor in this offense last year. I mean, if Tommy Sweeney can flash at all.
Because Allen otherwise didn't use tight end last year, even when it wasn't Clay. Like, who was the second guy?
And on multiple occasions, Clay either dropped the ball or literally and figuratively dropped the ball. Because there was just a lot of times last year where you just thought of Charles Clay as a player you just couldn't count on anymore.
Well, that's the other thing, too. Like, that's part of the reason I think they got Beasley, is someone reliable that can kind of consistently get open between the hash marks. And you either want your slot receiver to do that, or you want your starting tight end to be able to do that. And last year, who did the Bills really have that was consistently getting open in the middle of the field? I'm not saying Allen didn't throw it there, but who was getting open? Because Clay was certainly not doing it from the tight end position, and they really didn't have a slot receiver that did it until Isaiah McKenzie showed up late. So if you have Beasley plus a tight end, that's only going to even help, I think, your outside receivers to get open, because you're going to have another element of your offense in the middle that defenses have to pay attention to.
So let's go to the phones. Let's go to Mike in Hotlanta. Mike, you're on the postgame show. Welcome.
Hey, guys. I hope you can do me a favor and let me hear your answer, because I'm down outside of Atlanta and I don't have any video.
No problem.
All right, thank you. I'm a little encouraged. I know it's only a couple of plays from Christian Wade, but the guy just seems to have a lot of ability. You think he's got any shot to make this team?
I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but I kind of said it before. Like, I think it's mostly because of what else they have.
Yeah.
And because they get a free practice squad spot to put him on, I think I'd have to say he has no shot.
Yeah, and not only that, Mike, but I think you just look at the veteran presence on this team, between Frank Gore, LeSean McCoy. They're paying $9 million this year. LeSean McCoy is the highest paid running back in football. It's kind of crazy, but I don't see it happening unless there is a move made and they decide to move away from LeSean McCoy.
If he got traded, well, how much would that change for you on Wade's shot to make the team? Like, it wouldn't be zero for me anymore. I still think it would be unlikely, but
I still think it'd be unlikely, because I think then TJ Yeldon is probably going to be in there.
I think Yeldon and McCoy would not have to be here for him to make it.
I think that's right.
Because, and this isn't his fault, he's just learning to play football. Special teams has not been put on his plate yet.
Right.
So
that's a good point.
If you do want to run back for special teams,
he would be an interesting special teams player.
He would, but do you want to start throwing that at him right now too?
Well,
he's barely
not
learning the offensive rules.
Probably not. Thanks, Mike. We appreciate the call, brother. Let's go to Jonathan and Alden. John, you're on with Nate and Joe postgame show. Welcome, man.
Hey, Nate. Hey, Joe. I want to say I'm very encouraged with what I saw. They looked dominant two games in a row.
Yeah.
I know it's only preseason. I know the 1990 Bills went 0-4 in the preseason, so maybe I shouldn't put too much stock into it. But I am very encouraged with what I saw. The defense is looking good. Allen's looking good. I really liked what I saw from Matt Barkley. I'm glad we have a quality back just in case Allen goes down. But so far, so good. I'm really liking what I see.
Thanks, John. Appreciate the call, brother. Thanks for listening. How was that dude on the street 2 years ago?
Barkley?
Yeah.
Should have been in the league. He was good in Chicago.
He was good in Chicago in his spare time. Like, he didn't play a lot that season, but I'm pretty sure that was Cutler's last year in Chicago. And Cutler ends up getting hurt. Somebody else ends up getting hurt. And then Matt Barkley comes in and plays the final few games of the season.
McCown, I think, was
McCown
there,
too. And then he ends up getting hurt in the 2017 preseason?
Barkley? I think that's right.
He gets hurt in the 2017 preseason, ends up getting waived, doesn't play the entire 2017 season. Then, or what? Maybe that injury happened in the 2018 preseason, and then he's out of football for two months?
He didn't play anything in 2017.
Okay, so he didn't play at all 2017, didn't play at the beginning or hitch on to any team in 2018. He wasn't on a roster, right? Or did he go somewhere and then get cut?
I think he might have done that. By the way, he did not play very well in Chicago that year before. He had 8 touchdowns and 14 interceptions. So I might have overestimated him being good in Chicago.
I didn't say good. You say he played well. And I mean, he didn't.
He wasn't great. You know what? I was confusing him with Josh McCown because he had that crazy year in Chicago that one year, and I think they were on the team at the same time, like you mentioned. And then when McCown got hurt, that's when Barkley came in. But to me, he's just an upgrade as a veteran backup than what you had over Derek Anderson. Like last year when you were searching for a veteran backup when you realized Nathan Peterman should not be on your football team, they brought in Derek Anderson originally, and that's all well and good for him being a mentor and him being a veteran presence, but you saw in New England when he had to go on the field, your offense ran better when LeSean McCoy was your quarterback on the first drive than when Derek Anderson was for the rest of the game. So Barkley, at least, I think with the Jet game and even in Chicago, I guess a little bit, you can see that he can at least keep your team floating above water. I don't really think this preseason is supposed to make me think that if Allen gets hurt at some point this season, the Bills can still be a playoff team. But if he's got to play a game or two, then I might think he's good enough for that.
Let's go back to the phone. Let's go to Mario in Buffalo. Mario, you're on with Nate and Joe on the postgame show. Welcome.
Hey, how are you?
Doing very well.
My problem is Stain, the left guard. Mm-hmm. He was getting thrown around the whole game. The one time when Josh Allen was stepping up in the pocket and got sacked, the reason why he had to step up is because his man literally took him and threw him back. And then after that, he got a holding call. He just looked terrible. From watching his game, I watched some of the other stuff he did when he was at Jacksonville.
Tennessee.
I can kind of see why they let him go. I think he's a liability. I wouldn't be surprised if next week they start trying other people there because he just didn't look good at all.
Thanks for the call, Mario. He's been the only offensive lineman to not come out of any team drills with the first team offense. Additionally, he was, whatever you want to take away from Pro Football Focus offensive line rankings, I don't put a ton into it. But I mean, it's the only real metric you have out there that you can say.
Man, they were right about Russell Bonine last year. Because I remember seeing when the Bills signed him, like, this guy was the worst center in football last year. It's like, okay, well, he started, so maybe not. And then he showed up, and it's like, okay, that's the reason he was graded as the worst offensive lineman in football. So
Quentin Spain was rated the number one run blocking guard in football last year from Pro Football Focus.
I think he was well below average in pass blocking.
Though. He was well below average.
Which
pass
is why
blocking.
I think he kind
of
came out
he
average.
He was also, by the way, only played two series of the football game. So whole game is a little.
I also didn't really notice him getting pushed back a lot.
He got the penalty called. And he also was going up against Quan Short, who is a very good, maybe one of the more underrated defensive tackles in football.
Listen, if he's struggling, the way this offensive line has been playing, they showed a highlight package on TV of John Feliciano, who seemed to play very well at center, and he was getting first team reps before they had injuries. The way this offensive line is setting up, Spain's not playing well, he's not going to play because they have a lot of other options.
If I'm looking for problems or issues after this football game, the offensive line isn't one of them.
No, I thought they played very well.
I thought they played fine. By the way, I'm not going to say they played like some sort of great game and they're transcendent or something, but they look like a much improved unit. The only two times that Josh Allen was either sacked or close to a sack, quite frankly, held onto the ball too long. I didn't, at one point did I watch that football game in that first half, in the first two series, and think, man, this offensive line looks overmatched. I just didn't really cross my mind.
By the way, quick clarification. Matt Barkley was on the Bengals in 2018.
That's
but
right.
He got to placed on IR to start the season because he had a knee injury.
Right.
So he would have been their backup probably.
803-0551, 888-552-550, the numbers to call on the other side of the break. Joe and I will continue taking your calls. Time now for the MVP of the game. It's brought to you by Steve Foley Law, the MVP of your case. Settle for more with Steve Foley Law, your MVP of this football game, Matt Barkley. Barkley finishes the game 8 of 10, 110 yards, and a touchdown, following up a great performance last week and a great week of practice at Wofford College this week. Matt Barkley, your player of the game. When we return, we'll continue taking your phone calls here on another segment of the postgame show. You're listening to Buffalo Bills Football.
Are you ready for some football? Buffalo Bills style.
Looking for Foster, makes the catch at the Jacksonville 40. Scooting down the right sideline. He's going. He is in.
Caught by the tight end, Troy Lobo. Knocked down right away by Jordan Poyer. What a tackle. Ball is out again. And the Bills recover again. Milano on top of it. He may keep it himself. Allen at the 5. Into the end zone. He goes. Touchdown. Touchdown. Josh Allen does it yet again.
Bring it. This is the postgame show. Buffalo Bills football on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network is brought to you by
Northwest Bank, increasing the value of you.
Welcome back to the Buffalo Bills postgame show here on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Let's pause 10 seconds for station identification. You're listening to the Buffalo Bills Radio Network.
Sports Radio 550 WGR Buffalo and WKSE HD2 Niagara Falls Buffalo, 98.5 FM, a radio.com sports station.
Welcome back here to the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Joe DiBiase, Nate Geary here, breaking things down after a 27-14 win on the road to go to 2-0 on the preseason, undefeated so far in the preseason. I'll tell you what, if the preseason's anything like the beginning of the season, the Bills start 2-0. I'm going to feel pretty darn good going into that home opener against the Cincinnati Bengals. Let me just tell you that.
I don't know, man. The Giants are like, their quarterbacks are just throwing all over the place. Eli and Daniel Jones just lighting it up.
Danny Jones, a.k.a. Danny Dimes, 11-14, 161 yards and a touchdown, following up his 4-for-4 performance last week and a touchdown through the air. Danny Dimes, everybody.
Hey, maybe he's starting by week two. Their owner kind of put the kiboshes on that this week when he said they'd hope that he doesn't play all season.
John Fox and Kenny Mayne have, this is the first time they've ever been in a room together, and I'm not sure that we're not seeing human technology duplicate two people, by the way.
Well, I think John Fox is a little older version of him.
He might be. By the way, they're showing some highlights of Josh Rosen. There aren't many highlights from this game except for Ryan Fitzpatrick running over defender.
Oh, it's amazing.
This was a really bad game, at least with the Bills. Last preseason, like, Nathan Peterman was lighting the world on fire. The Dolphins look absolutely horrendous.
Yeah.
From they can't block anybody. From offensive line to skill position players to they're just an absolute tire fire. Honestly, might end up seeing happening this year is Greer and Flores both out at the end of the season.
After one season, it could happen.
I could see an Arizona-type situation.
What it makes me think why they traded for Josh Rosen. Like, you got to be aware of what the weaknesses of your team are, and you've got to be aware of what he would need as a quarterback. And there's no way that goes well. He'll end up starting at some point this year, almost no doubt for me. And there's just no way that goes well.
Yeah.
The problem he had in Arizona is he had no time to throw. He does not have the athleticism of an Allen or a Lamar Jackson or even a Darnold to make up for not having a good O-line. So, I don't know. If I'm the Dolphins, I don't know why I made that trade. Because if it goes poorly after 1 year, then they're probably going to want to draft the guy and they just spent a second-round pick for Josh Rosen for what? And now he's going to have depleted trade value.
Yeah, literally Dolphins. No trade value whatsoever.
I feel bad for him a little bit.
Yeah. What are you going to do? They're showing a little Josh Allen highlights here on SportsCenter. Let's go to Jason in Cherry Creek. You're on the postgame show with Nate and Joe. Welcome, Jason.
Hey, gentlemen. How are we doing tonight?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Loving what we see. The only thing, if I'm ever going to poke a flaw, we got to face Le'Veon Bell in the first game, and I didn't like how we couldn't really stop the run. I would trade something valuable to get Clowney. I mean, just for his run-stopping ability and pass-rushing ability. It would just be like icing on the cake. And if you'd allow me one more thing.
Sure.
I mean, we have guys like Zay Jones and LeSean McCoy. I mean, yes, I understand, okay, money and you got draft picks, but there's so much talent. Like, I mean, I know Wade ain't going to make the team with that, but so many hungry guys that are good, yet we have to constantly waste downs on guys like this because of previous commitments. It's just not fair.
Yeah, I hear you, man. And to your first point, the Clowney thing, yeah, I mean.
How valuable? That's the question.
Right.
I'd love to get him.
But honestly, I don't think I'm giving up any of my tackles.
Any of them?
If you want Wyatt Teller, I could talk about Wyatt Teller.
Okay. What about Nseke?
Oh, no.
You wouldn't. Straight up. Straight up, you would not trade Ty Nseke for Jadeveon Clowney.
Because it'd be more than that, though. Like, it's not going to just
that's
be
that's
Ty
not what
Nseke.
I'm asking you. If it's straight up, would you do that?
I probably would. Okay. But that puts you in a really tough situation if one of your tackles goes down. A really tough one.
But see, to me, and it's hard to make this argument right now because Trent Murphy had a really nice play tonight, but I would trust the offensive line to be good if they stay healthy, which that would be the problem, but I would trust them to stay good without one of their tackles. Then I think their pass rush can be good without a guy like Clowney.
That's my whole thing. And from a run defense standpoint,
he was the second best defensive end in run defense.
I wouldn't worry too much about this Bills run defense. I think they've got the guys in place. I also think, like, you know, guys like Tremaine Edmonds, Matt Milano, Lorenzo Alexander, that I mean, Jerry Hughes, we haven't seen play yet. Shaq Lawson has been a really good run defender, and that's going to probably continue on this season. Shaq Lawson, other than the penalty today, another really kind of strong game for Shaq Lawson as a guy who's in a really important year for his own, you know, future aspirations as an NFL player. But I don't know. I look at the team from a kind of overhead view, a 30,000-foot view. Would Jadeveon Clowney be great? Absolutely. He's a cornerstone player. He would be, you know, we had this conversation last postgame show, is, you know, the five most important positions in football. The Bills really don't have, like, a transcendent slash top five slash elite player at any of those positions. They might, maybe, someday at the middle linebacker position, which we've kind of identified as one of those five, you know, peak positions that you need. Hopefully you do at quarterback. I don't think you have an elite player, but I think you have a second-tier player in Jerry Hughes at the pass rush position.
Yep.
I think you have a third-tier player in Trent Murphy. Cornerback, I think you have a tier-one player.
I think you have one guy.
And then you're just – so, and maybe wide receiver, maybe left tackle, right? Like, do they have that in Deion Dawkins? No, but could they? I think Deion Dawkins is a tier-three tackle right now. Could he move into that tier-two, tier-one spot? We'll see. Would Jadeveon Clowney help this team? Absolutely. I just don't think right now you look at this roster and you say, I'd be willing to give up a tackle. Okay, what it's like, right, is like having three fantasy running backs and having a flex in two running back spots and thinking to yourself, man, I could flip this decent. I could flip Tevin Coleman. He's my third running back. I don't really need him. But if you trade him and then one of your running backs goes down or during that bye week, who are you putting in for them?
Well,
and my thought there becomes, if a Cody Ford goes down, or what if Cody Ford isn't a very good right tackle? And now all of a sudden you don't have any other option at the right tackle position other than to wait out the year with Cody Ford at right tackle. And here's the other thing. What if a John Feliciano goes down? So I guess my point becomes it's a strength for you right now by the numbers. If you take one away, it stops becoming a strength for you.
I agree. But when I'm valuing offensive line depth versus who my number one pass rusher is, I think I have to value who my number one pass rusher is. And if this were fantasy, I would tell the Bills that if you're going to get a player like that and you have to give up an offensive lineman, then you should take one of your other defensive ends. Like, if this were fantasy, I would take a Shaq Lawson and I would trade him for a depth offensive lineman. That's what I would do. So if that's what's stopping them, it's the depth, then I think that's wrong. But if it's they don't want to give up Deion Dawkins, then I think that's completely fair. Because he is, he's not only their left tackle right now, he might be the offensive lineman on their team with the most upside. Him or Cody Ford would probably be close because they're both second-round picks. So I can understand why they wouldn't want to do that, but I like the idea. I don't think they need to do it.
I don't think they need to either.
But it'd be nice. It'd be nice to have.
It would be definitely very nice to have. Having a number one receiver would be nice to have. AJ Green would be nice to have.
How much do you trust their pass rush without a player like that? So far in the preseason, I thought their pass rush has actually been pretty good. It depends.
Pass rush is fine.
I think the expectation to get something out of Shaq Lawson in that area is gone. Like, I know he looked good tonight, but he did a lot of it against second or third teamers. His talent to me has always come out more in his run defense. Murphy would be the one guy where he had that one really good season in Washington. Can he recreate that this year now that he's healthy? That might be a way to get that type of player, but otherwise, I think you have to do it via volume, and you might have to have Lorenzo Alexander rush the passer more than you had him do it last year.
Yeah, and I look at it like this, though, is the defensive end position is
also
really,
Daryl Johnson, by the way.
You do have, correct, and that's kind of where I'm going with this, is the strength in their defensive end unit is in their numbers. And you go into this preseason, you go into training camp thinking, okay, I think we have three players we know we really like and can have on the roster right now, and Shaq Lawson, Trent Murphy, and Jerry Hughes. But who's going to vie for that fourth spot? I think a lot of people were thinking it's going to be a fight between Mike Love and Eddie Yarbrough. They like Yarbrough as a guy they've had for a couple of years, but they like Mike Love and what he brought at the end of last season. And then they have a seventh-round pick, right? A super raw, a perfect example of, you know, drafting traits and hoping they can translate into the NFL game. He was virtually an unknown coming out of North Carolina A&T. So this is a player in Daryl Johnson now that if you have found something, even if you find a guy that can be a situational pass rusher, I know that he was playing against a guy that's likely going to be an insurance salesman in a couple weeks. But, man, did he put some moves on that right tackle late in that fourth quarter. Whew! I mean, two in a row. A sack fumble and then a little dip inside. Oh, man. Like, he – the thing I like about Darryl Johnson a lot is there appears to be a plan every time the ball is snapped and he starts a pass rush.
And it looks like he's got a plethora of moves,
he's
by
got
the way.
Moves. He's got plans. Like –
And that's always been my problem with Shaq Lawson.
Yes.
Because I feel like his only go-to move is to bull rush the tackle. And he doesn't have a lot else in his arsenal. And that would give me I'm not saying Darryl Johnson is going to be great because it's preseason. He's a seventh-round pick. You never know. He might do nothing in the league. But from what it appears, I would be hopeful that he can be something because it seems like every time he's going at the quarterback, he's got something different that he's trying to use to get to that quarterback. So there could be some potential there, plus also his size. He would definitely factor into this.
Let's grab a couple phone calls before we get out of here for the evening. Let's go to Buzz in Buffalo. Buzz, you're on the postgame show. Welcome, my friend.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, real quick, I've been on this Jadeveon Clowney thing, it seems like, for the last, like, two or three nights. But so if you're going to trade him, like, instead of flipping Lawson for a backup tackle, the most obvious piece that's going to move is Lawson to Houston. That's part of the deal. That's the number one thing that's going to be, not the number one thing, but that's Lawson goes if Jadeveon Clowney comes. And
that's
then
probably right.
The pick. I mean, that's the most obvious thing. I mean, I don't hear anyone talking about that. Nobody, not just you guys. I'm just saying nobody. I mean, obviously.
Well, I think the reason for that is that the reports out of Houston is if they're going to trade him, it's only going to be because they need to upgrade their offensive line. That'd
right.
be the only reason they do it in the first place.
Then give him something on the offensive line, but it won't be Dawkins. And you give him they're going to want someone to replace Clowney as well. Don't tell me they wouldn't be interested in Lawson, be able to sign him. Lawson's not chump change.
No, for sure. But I think, Buzz, the only thing that comes into play, thanks for the call, by the way, the only thing that comes into play there is he's not going to be the primary piece they're looking for in exchange for Jadeveon Clowney. Because here's the thing. They're moving out a player on an expiring contract and or a franchise tag for a player that's on an expiring contract.
Right.
And I don't know that even makes sense for them to do. Would they like him back? I think, yeah. Like, and I think the Bills probably send him back in a trade with them. But I also think that has to include a player that they like on the offensive line.
Because otherwise they have no reason to do it.
And I'm unwilling to move a tackle, in my opinion. The three tackles to me are off limits. So if you could get away with, and I think Wyatt Teller makes the most sense. He's a young player. But
there's no way.
If you do Shaq Lawson, Wyatt
not
Teller,
valuable
a second
enough.
Or third round
he's not
pick,
valuable enough.
He has playing experience.
Wyatt Teller, Shaq Lawson, it's in second round pick.
In a second round pick.
To me, Teller seems like he's the third most valuable piece in that trade. And the reason I would say they don't do that is because I think if they're going to trade Clowney, it's not going to be just get any offensive lineman.
I just
the
want
offensive
to point
lineman
out.
Needs to be the most valuable thing in what they get back.
I get that. But just so you know, not a lot of teams are just willing to give away valuable offensive
Washington
linemen.
Should be, but
Washington
no.
should be, but they won't.
Why is that trade not
happening? That's the most reasonable
trade. Why is that trade not happening?
Trent Williams for Jadeveon Clowney makes the most
happen?
Sense in the world.
So why
right?
isn't it happening?
I mean, tell me that trade doesn't make just the most sense in the world.
Because Washington's run by a bunch of fools.
Yes, Dan Snyder.
Yeah, one fool, at least.
Let's get one more phone call in before we head out for the night. Let's go to James. James, you're on the postgame show. Welcome, James.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think that the trade for Clowney would like solidify how behind the Bills are with like the philosophy of the current NFL. They're looking to boast of their defense when it's all offense now. So giving up a key piece for the line, which everybody says is lacking, to get more defense would just prove how bad they are with actually seeing what the NFL is. It's passing. They got McCoy that they're still going to run with. So I feel like running the ball and defense doesn't win games anymore. It's offense and giving up alignment on the O for Clowney doesn't make sense to me.
I completely disagree, James. I get your point about the offense, but, I mean, you can make the argument right now that corner and defensive end are arguably the two premier positions in football outside of quarterback and left tackle. Like, right now, the only way that teams can stop what people are doing is by having effective pass rushers and good corners that can cover.
Not to mention, think about it. What are the two key successes in the NFL now?
passing the football at a high octane offense,
being able to rush the passer,
rushing the passer,
and 100%. Like
last year was this team. I think it was the Bears. They acquired some guy.
The Bears. You look at
didn't they trade for someone who played around the corner?
There was somebody.
Oh yeah, right, Khalil Mack.
So to a point, like they're not really investing in the running game. They're a team that's trying to pass the ball more. And to be honest with you, you mentioned the offensive line is a weak point. I don't know anyone that's saying right now it's a weak point. In fact, most people argue the Bills' offensive line might be the most improved unit across the league from 2018 to 2019. Having said that, I agree with you. One reason, James, is I don't want them to move a tackle. I don't see the depth at that position for them to take a hit like that. So I do agree with you there, but in terms of the priority of defense and that position in particular, that is one of, there are very few, there are just like wide receiver, there are very few of those pinnacle A-plus tier one defensive ends in the league pass rushers. There are very few of them. If you have one, you have such an advantage.
I guess I partially agree with both of you. I think you're right in that, like, a franchise pass rusher is, if not the second most, like, the third most important thing to have on your team. Like, it's right up there. But to his original point, which is more offense versus defense, on that I agree with the caller. Because defense is so much more random year to year than offense is. And I think you see that around the league. Like, I would expect a team like Chicago, who was first in the league in defense last year and just slightly above average in offense, to be a prime candidate to regress, because it is so hard to maintain a elite defense year to year to year. And if you're going to build your team that way, I think you're going to have a hard time sustaining success in the league. But if your offense does come along with it, then I think that can be a great combination. So part of me thinks that they don't really fully get what is succeeding in the league right now because they built their defense up first. That's just how they did it philosophically. But on this one, like Clowney and getting that prime pass rusher, that would be one of the exceptions I would make to, okay, I'm going to sacrifice some offense to get the defense. And it's not offense versus defense for me for that. It's position versus position. It's what I think one of your strengths are right now, which is your depth on the offensive line versus what I think one of your weaknesses are, which is not having an elite pass rusher on this team that you can count on week in and week out that is not Jerry Hughes. To me, that's what it's more about than the offense versus defense point of it.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right, that's going to do it for us here on the postgame show. Until next week, the Bills take on the Detroit Lions on the road. Are they home? They're on the road to Detroit, so we'll hear from us. You'll hear from me tomorrow. I'll be back for Sports Talk Sarah and Derek and I tomorrow here locally on WGR, so you can hear us there. So thanks to Joe. Thanks to Derek. You can hear me tomorrow morning here locally on WGR. So for everyone else, a good night here from the Buffalo Bills Radio Network.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.